Truth Warrior, Woke Destroyer.
Only in America.
Randy Tobler.
Dreaming in red, white, and blue.
On News Talk STL.
Only in America. Where we dream as big as we want to. We all get a chance.
It's always fun when we talk with Ilan Srulevich. About the goings on in the day, he's an actor, also a. Are you a watchmaker as well as a designer, Ilan? Welcome to the program.
Hey, yeah, thanks for having me back on. So I design the watches. We have a team of manufacturers. So yeah. I own a watch brand.
Really cool. So you're the CEO of Egard Watch Company. All right, now. This crazy story, and it caught my attention because I enjoy disc golf. It's sort of fun. You know, I like it. And then I saw that now, maybe in a precedent-setting event, a transgender, a man who thinks he's a woman, sued. Do I have this right? They sued the Golf Association, the Disc Golf Association, and they finally cried uncle because they were losing money. So they backed down on their rules. Tell us the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's pretty much what's taken place. You nailed it. There was lawsuits being pressed, and they decided to succumb and say, if you drop all the charges, then we'll just give in to what you want, which is essentially allowing trans people who've undergone at least a year of hormone therapy to compete. And so they're once again allowing biological males into female sports due to pressure, whether social, legal. It's a common trend, sadly, nowadays.
And as I understand it, I mean, they had a rule in place, mm-hmm. and this is what this individual was fighting, that basically insisted the previous rule that he was fighting, but wants to be called a she, was barring transgender people from competing in the elite series events and majors unless they'd undergone their gender transition prior to going through puberty. They previously said, okay, look, we'll let you do it as long as you haven't developed the phenotypic characteristics of a strong male who can throw that disc farther, right? I mean, there's advantages once they go through puberty. There's differences between men and women, even when the women go on testosterone. And the men go on testosterone. The men go on estrogen, and they go on testosterone suppressing medications. Yeah,
there's a huge misconception that people think once you transition as an adult and you take estrogen or whatever therapy you go through, that you somehow undo all the years of puberty and development that you had prior. You don't. There's a physical structural difference that takes place during puberty.
Yep.
When you get that boost of testosterone, your physical structure as a biological male is different. Your tendons are different.
Yeah.
Your proportions are different. You cannot undo what has been done. And there's an unlimited amount of research on this. It shouldn't even be a controversial thing. This is hard science. This isn't something debatable. And yet somehow people are just trying to, they're trying to rewrite it across the board with everything to do with gender. But, you know, when it comes to the differences between biological men and women, it's undeniable.
Yeah, it's now they do, I think, express the Professional Disc Golf Association and another organization involved in the professional sport hope for some and maybe forecast that there may be some regulatory things coming down from a statutory standpoint. I think that's a long way off in the future. What do you think?
Also, I agree with you, and I don't think you can rely on that. I think people have to take a stance and stick with it. They want to affect any form of change. Common sense stances should not be something that people are scared to take nowadays, and yet it's becoming more and more and more common to just to come to, whether it's, like I said previously, social pressure, legal pressure. You have to ask yourself why so many people are intent on deconstructing basic objective truths in society.
Yeah.
And it's not just sports, it's across the board.
Yeah, it seems to me that common sense would tell people, when you look at the percentage of young people, especially in our middle schools and high schools, and sadly sometimes even in late grade school, the percentages now that say, hey, I want to be the other, compared to just a few short years ago, that doesn't, even if you're the most rabid Darwinian evolutionist, that doesn't happen. I mean, you know, there's nothing in the water doing that. This is a social contagion. And yet you've got major medical groups. Almost all the professional medical groups have bought into it, you know? And I scratch my head and I think these people should be smarter than that, shouldn't they, Elon?
I don't even think it's a matter of intelligence. If you look at what psychogenic epidemics occur throughout history, you have highly intelligent people just going along to ludicrous positions. And there's multiple reasons for it, but there's no doubt that in modern day Western society, there are psychogenic epidemics taking place. This is one of them. An absolute denial of an objective truth that comes with severe consequence. Severe consequence to the point of putting biological men with a history of sexually assaulting women in prison with women. That's how far society has gone.
And we've seen in many cases where, I mean, there's really tragic assaults that occur clearly by deceitful men who were just putting on the act to get into the other bathroom or the other dressing room, mm-hmm. right? I mean, it's just, this makes no sense. You got to pinch yourself. You wonder if you're in, I mean, you're an actor. Do you sometimes wonder if, like, if this is all just a large stage play or something? I don't know.
Well, a lot of the time it feels like the Twilight Zone. You know what I mean? When you look at South Park and you look at the satire that South Park did 10 years ago, it's reality today. We've become a society of satire. But it's more tragic because there's actual real world consequences yeah. now that we're dealing with.
Yeah.
But again, I really believe there is an identity issue in the country. I believe that people don't have any self-value. They don't know where to derive value from. And so they're just, everything is morally relative. They don't believe in any form of absolute or objective truth. There's no universal ethic. And so they just latch on to whatever the trend is that makes them feel important and makes them feel valued, yeah. which is why you see so many kids at exponential rates, 30% identifying as LGBTQIA+.
yeah.
I mean,
where was it? At Brown University? Wasn't it 40% of the people? I think it was Brown. I don't know where. It's like at a major university, you've got almost half of the student body saying that they're non-binary, they're whatever. You know, I'm like, I don't know, crazy. So listen to this, though. There's hope. We're talking with Elon. It's Elon, right? Elon?
Elon.
Yes, Elon Srulevich, actor and CEO of EGuard Watch Company. Now, I want you to listen to this. You've probably seen this, and folks, you may have heard it, but this is, I think, a courageous Delta Airlines counter guy who was confronted by clearly someone trying to make a point, a transgender individual who, by the way, hangs out with, I keep wanting to say Devin, but it's Dylan Mulvaney. Listen to this. I thought it was going to play and it didn't. But the guy basically told him, hey, you know, I'm not going to put up with your nonsense. He accused him of misgendering. And he was, oh, she misgendered. She called me a he. And then he said, sir, look, come on. Do you want to play the games here? I can force it. I have the authority to. Well, it's good to see people taking the risk, because it is these days risky in the corporate environment, is it not, to fight back against this craziness?
Extremely risky, but until more people do it and normalize it, it will continue to be risky. It's kind of, you need people to open the door for other people to walk through it. It's one of the reasons I try and be so outspoken about it. You have to be able to normalize common sense. I've seen law enforcement do that too. Where they get someone's ID, they're like, and the person's saying, oh, you're misgendering me. And they're like, well, your ID says you're a man, so you're a man.
Yeah, right. I mean, you know, you clearly look like and you sound like a man. You're not going to be singing soprano in the chorus at church this week. And, you know, sorry, you know, let's call it what it is. Oh, here's this sound now. It's fascinating stuff. Here we are.
And what about when an adult employee misgenders you intentionally?
While he's talking, you're talking.
You just misgendered me again.
Yeah. Okay.
Multiple times.
Gotcha.
Both of you have.
Sorry.
Wasn't intentional, but if you want to take it personal, that's also.
Well, she did do it intentionally twice.
I did not do it.
You said she, and then you said he.
You're being condescending, and if you want to continue, ooh. I have full authority to escort you out the building right this moment. If you want to play that game with me,
okay.
Would you like to continue 3 days before Christmas? I really don't mind.
I'm good. I'll just put this on.
And you know, that was it. It was like, bam, mm-hmm. it was over. And I think more and more people need to take some inspiration from that and be bold and call the truth the truth.
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
It's also interesting how they'll use it as a weapon. How they'll use, oh, you misgendered me, therefore you are obligated to now accommodate me and my needs. That's not the way the world works.
Yeah.
So that in itself is a really interesting thing.
Well, look what's happened to Canada, up to our north. I mean, if you say the wrong thing, as I understand it now, I mean, I don't yet think they're up to criminal penalties, but I think there are civil penalties that are, I mean, it's pretty well established. You can get your butt in big trouble.
You can also have your child removed from your home if you don't, and that has happened. And I do believe they've arrested people.
Yeah, maybe, I think you're right. I think you're right there. Yeah, it's criminal. You know, maybe it's not a major felony, but for crying out loud, I don't know.
Everyone has to ask themselves what the end result is of this path that we're going on. So it starts off with saying, hey, why do you care? Why do you care if someone wants to be a man or a woman? Okay, I don't care. That's the truth. But then they go, well, now it's not enough that you don't care. You have to allow me to be considered a man or a woman in all aspects of society, of all aspects of civilization and interaction. I need to be accepted as what I believe I am. And if you don't, you're a problem. You're the enemy now. And so that's where it went very quickly. And then the next step is saying, well, why are we stopping at just gender? Why aren't we doing this with age? Why aren't we doing this with anything that can be subjectively broken down, which is all objective truth? And so it's not far-fetched, and there's been pushes for this, for the next thing to be age. And there's going to be a lot of disturbing people out there who are older men who are going to say, well, I'm a 12-year-old kid now. So now you can't tell me I'm not a 12-year-old kid.
Yeah.
Why isn't that the next possible step here that nobody's willing to acknowledge? If anything, if a body washed up on a beach, the first thing I'd know about it is its biological sex. I would not know its age. Age is far more difficult to assess in terms of just basic objective reality than someone's gender.
Good point. Wow. Yeah, you know what? I'm going to try something. You just inspired me to try something. I'm going to go home tonight, Elon. And I'm going to tell my wife that this old, you know, almost totally bald guy now is Tom Selleck. I'm going to identify as Tom Selleck. Think I got a chance of a snowball, you know where, of her agreeing with me? I don't think so. I don't think so. Hey, but you know, you said that they insist on being accepted. It's getting to the point where that's not enough. You have to celebrate them, right? They now need to be conspicuously put up on some pedestal as special people. I mean, it's like, why is it that, okay, you just want to be accepted for what you are. Can I be accepted for the way I view you? Why don't we just have mutual acceptance here? You know, let's call it a day. That's not good enough for them, is it?
And why do we have to go beyond, fine, I accept you. You could be whatever you want, but I don't need to call you what you want to be called. That's not how adults interact with each other. Mm-hmm. If someone doesn't want to be nice to me or someone doesn't want to accommodate me, I'm a grown adult.
Yeah.
I will function as such. I will move on with my life. I will not go out and start a tirade for you to have to acknowledge me the way I want to be acknowledged. People always go, well, what would you do if someone misgendered you? I'm like, I wouldn't care.
Yeah.
If someone wanted to be, call me a woman, by all means, go ahead. I don't care.
Yeah.
And we've gotten to a point where the right to not be offended is superseding the right to offend. And that's a very dangerous place in society. It's why it started off with all these safe spaces and, oh, you know, everyone gets a trophy. We can't let anyone feel offended. No, people should be offended in a free society. We should have that luxury to offend, not luxury, necessity to be able to offend each other, because there is no way to not offend people inevitably. And it's why you see they're taking advantage of our tolerance a lot of the time to kind of put us down and get us to self-censor. And I don't think that's a functional way to proceed.
I mean, truth be, if someone comes up and I make, you know, in their perception, I make a mistake from their point of view, and they're kind and they say, hey, you know, I'd rather be called, you know, she. Oh, okay. I, you know, just because I'm a human being and I don't like conflict, and just out of courtesy, I'd probably say, okay. It's a totally different thing when you're talking about kids, though. And when you have adults who know better, taking kids with a mental illness and doing what they're doing to children, to me, I mean, this is just, this verges on the Tuskegee experiment. I'm sorry. It just verges on that. And you know, what I like to think about is, okay, Elon, think about this. When people have depression, we learned a while back, you don't do frontal lobotomies right away. You do counseling, you do medicines. we're essentially doing the equivalent of, you know, a frontal lobotomies, except in a different area on these kids. We're going to the most radical treatment instead of treating their mental illness. It's the most horrific do harm rather than do no harm thing under the name of do no harm that I've ever heard of. I can't believe it. And the medical establishment's bought in, too.
Yep, the medical establishment might not have bought in. They're just bullied in. And this again, this need for identity, politics, intersectionality. Yeah. What's going on in universities is really absurd. But yes, absolutely. I always say this, if your kid came to you and said, I don't believe I should have arms, would you go remove their arms? Because that's how they identified. They identified as not having arms. It's a totally fair comparison, by the way, and there really is an illness where people believe that they have limbs they shouldn't have.
Wow.
That's a real thing. So imagine doctors, as a first line of treatment, started saying, okay, well, you're right. You actually are supposed to have no arms. Let's remove it. Yeah. The entire thing is a gross contradiction.
It's crazy.
Because on one hand, they're saying gender doesn't exist. It's a social construct. But on the other end, they're saying, but we're going to operate you, completely change your body, modify you to meet the standard that doesn't even exist. So which is it? Does it not exist? Then you say you're a woman. Then you shouldn't have to change anything about yourself. You're a woman. And then there's no such thing as gender, and even the term woman doesn't mean anything anymore. Or is it that it does mean something? There is a biological precedent, and you're trying to manipulate and change your body to be the thing you are not. They still can't answer that basic hypocrisy. They exist in both places at once.
Well, unfortunately, you're making way too much sense, and you're using way too much logic, and too much recognizing truth and reality, and none of those things, none of them resonate with the progressive left. Ilan Srulevich, thank you so much for being with me. Appreciate the conversations we've had in 23. I hope you have a healthy and happy new year. Hope eGuard Watch does well. And we'll be talking to you in the next year, I'm for sure. Thank you, my friend. All right, there he is, Ilan Srulevich. Really a compelling analysis of the world's problems we have. But you know, it's not all bad. There's a lot good going on. The markets have been looking good. We're going to be talking with Eric Robert. You hear him here on the Money right after this program. He'll be in the 8 o'clock hour, along with Gerald Celente, trends researcher, 8:25. Virginia Cruda next hour at 7:45. So lots coming up on the program. When we come back, we lost an iconic performer this last week. Now Jerome wasn't even a glint in his parents' eyes when Tommy and Dick Smothers were making waves in the 60s, but many of you will remember him. Talk about that. And Donald Trump on the education issues. Lots more coming up on the Randy Tober Show. Be right back. I want to tell you about Advanced Dentistry of St. Charles. You know, this is a time when you reconsider, maybe making some alterations in your life, maybe establishing some habits that maybe have fallen out of hand and you'd like to get them back in. One of those might be taking good care of your teeth. And, that starts with getting a thorough exam. I would say that fully 50, 60% of the patients that I see, new patients, need some dental work. They need some counseling. They need the education. They need expertise, either in, just good preventive dentistry, some replacement dentistry, some cosmetic dentistry. Sometimes I hear about headaches that I know are because they're clenching and grinding. My friends at Advanced Dentistry of St. Charles, Dr. Megan Dwyer, Dr. Daniel Cusimano, they can handle anything in and around the mouth that affects your not only your teeth, your gums, and the spinoff effects from that, the muscles around your teeth. So lots of great work going on in Advanced Dentistry of St. Charles. I look forward to my visits there. I really do. I've been going there for years, and I'd recommend you get in touch with them as well. You can get in touch with them at advanceddentistrynow.com. That's advanceddentistrynow.com. Or call 636-978-0226. That's 636-978-0226, Advanced Dentistry of St. Charles. Welcome back. It's 729. Numbers 314-912-1019. If you'd like to weigh in on the show, hope your Christmas was good. Hope that Santa was good to you. You didn't get a lump of coal in your stocking. You know, we talk a lot about negative news, and it is a tough, troubled time in America. But then just about the time that you're ready to say, my goodness, it's just going to, you know, where in a handbasket, something really cool happens. I mean, I don't know. It doesn't take much to make you feel good when things are going so south, you know. But I had the best Christmas present in a long time. My wife always comes up with great, great Christmas presents for you. I'm not near as creative. She wanted a... She wanted one of these weighted blankets. I didn't understand weighted blankets. She'd mentioned it. And then we actually did our Christmas with the kids and grandkids from, well, one son and daughter-in-law in Arlington near the swamp there. And they drove in week before Christmas. And my son-in-law, who's training at Fort Liberty in North Carolina, and my daughter drove in from North Carolina. It used to be Fort Bragg, but God forbid we call it, you know, the name of a Confederate general. It had to be changed, you know. And so they drove in. Anyway, we had this Christmas, and I went to the back of the car for one of the kids and to either get something out or put something in their car. And I went to move this blanket. It looked like a blanket, but it was heavy. And I thought, oh, wow, they got a leak in the sunroof. It got wet. What's going on? No, it was a weighted blanket. I don't understand the whole weighted blanket thing, but guys, if you're snuggling up next to a girl, sleeping in this morning, or maybe you're having coffee with your favorite girl, ask her about weighted blanket and just tell me if you don't get this in return. Oh, I feel like I'm getting a hug. I feel like I'm getting a hug. I don't understand it. I don't get it. Now, I used her weighted blanket. She was thrilled about the weighted blanket. That's good. My wife, I gave her a weighted blanket. I had a little like a 24-hour virus on Christmas Day, of all things. I woke up Christmas morning and I'm like, man, has all this just gorging on, you know, my wife's a holistic nutritionist and we eat so well, so healthily. And it's so great because she's a culinary expert as well. So you combine knowing what's healthy for us and then knowing how to make it just pop with taste explosion. I'm the luckiest guy in the world, not only on that front, but so many other fronts. But at any rate, so I get her the weighted blanket. I come down with the virus. The good news about getting a virus on Christmas Day with my wife, she was unhappy about that. And I was unhappy too, because she had her big meal planned that we do once a year. Once a year, we do lobster. It's the only time we do lobster. She gets a lobster tail. And we do that for Christmas. Whenever it's just she and I and the kids aren't around, and we do a lobster tail and really nice salad, a little Rich and Charlie salad she makes, and then nice glass of wine, you know. So we did that the next night. But anyway, Jerome, I don't know about you, but one of the tough things in life that us guys have to do is to sit through Hallmark movies. I was lucky enough that I had the virus. She offered me her weighted blanket because I had a little fever. It only 24 hours. I took some Airborne, some NyQuil, got a good sleep, you know, took a little extra vitamin C. Everything was good. So I was able to sleep through. You know, and then she had a Hallmark fest. And she didn't have to hear me call out the plot before we were 5 minutes into the movie, because they're all the same plot. You know what I mean about the Hallmark thing, don't you?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. You always know when the gal, usually I think, you know, the classic Hallmark is the gal has the snotty, arrogant, you know, guy who thinks he's hot stuff. Probably one of the football players who sits out on the bowl game, one of those kind of guys. And then the one I remember is, you know, she's with him and they're at the riding stable and she's riding and getting her horse ready. Oh, and you can tell early on, she looks across the stable and there's a guy in, you know, usually a plaid shirt and jeans, and he's cleaning out the horse stall. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That, you know how this is going to end up, right? Or translate that to the restaurant scene. she's with the front of the house guy that's welcoming people, and he's Mr. Snazzy that talks with the bow tie. And then she goes back to the kitchen to return a dish or something, and she connects with one of the line cooks, the guy that's, you know, maybe preparing the salad. You know where this is going to go. That's how it's going to end up. And it's just, I ruin it for her every time. I'm like, honey, why do you watch these things? You know what's good. You know what I mean, right, Jerome?
Oh, absolutely. It's like the most formulaic, predictable thing. And yet every single time, my mom and my girlfriend both, they're just like, I couldn't believe that was going to happen. It's like everybody else could, though. I don't get it.
Yeah. Now, does your girlfriend like the weighted blanket idea? Is that a cool thing for her?
Sure. Oh, yeah. Yeah, like I said, the one we had was dog sized, but I know she's going to want one for New Year's especially. So that's going to be on the list now.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, I mean, it's one of those things. It's not too awfully expensive, and you know, I think we're going to see how it works out, because there's like, these little millimeter glass beads that are sewn into these things. And I'm wondering, the first time you put this in the wash, you're going to end up with a bunch of, you know, pockets in this quilt-like structure that with clumped up beads in one corner. I don't know. I don't know how that's all going to work. We'll have to see. So where was I going with this? Oh, at any rate. So, yeah, it was about the weighted blanket. All right, let's. So Tommy Smothers. Tommy Smothers. Oh, no, I was going to go to, no, here's the good thing. The best gift. You know what my wife did for me? I'm going to show you here on the Rumble and the Facebook. You see that ring, class ring from my, I wear this ring from my med school to remind me of the wonderful time I had in med school, learning about how the body works and how it breaks and how we can fix it and the art of diagnosis and everything. It's really, it reminds me of that time and to stay diligent to those processes that we learn. But I had worn my class ring and must have, I don't know, working around the compound, the farm, you know, maybe, I don't know, but I scraped away the inset in there and it was all rugged and it was just looked terrible. It was from a company called Jostens, you know, they make class rings for everyone, you know, and, this is what, 35 years old. How many years old? 35, 38 years old. And, so I didn't know what to do with it. She said, boy, that's ugly. Take it off. Give it to me. I was so dumb. I didn't even realize that over the summer. She said, you can't be wearing that. It just looks ugly. It's all scraped up and everything. All the while, she was working to get this thing repaired. This is the best Christmas present ever. You know why? It didn't cost her anything, which is great. It didn't cost us anything. And this company, Jostens, you all know it if you've gotten class rings personally or for your kids. They repaired this thing free of charge. And it's like, this wasn't bought last year. And where I'm going with this is just about the time you lose faith in America and in the way this country's going, you know, a company with a solid brand makes a nice business gesture and does a good thing. So I wanted to give a shout out to them. And they didn't do it free to me, so I would give them a shout out because I'm on the radio. My wife did this behind the scenes. I'm sure they would do it for anyone. And my point is, they deserve a shout out because they did the right thing. They didn't have to do that. They could have charged her a good bunch of money. Let's play another feel good thing. For those of you who remember, Tommy and Dick Smothers had a variety show when variety shows were big back in the 60s. Tommy Smothers died. He was the guy that played dumb, but he was dumb like a fox in real life. Smart, smart, smart guy. And he and Dick just had a fabulous 1-2 punch in their act there. Tommy was the comedian. Dick was the straight man. Here's a little bit of Tommy playing dumb.
Well, Tommy, here we are. It's the night before Christmas.
I know it is. You know, and I know all around the country, there are people out there waiting, eagerly waiting for Santa Claus, you know, as they gaily place Christmas packages under the trees and singing all the traditional Christmas songs.
That's
and
right.
Drinking the traditional Christmas drinks, you know, that's Tom right. And Dickie's.
That's right.
Probably and having a big time.
No, Tommy, Tom and Jerry's. You made a mistake. It's Tom and
Jerry's. It's Tom and Dickie's.
Jerry's. Tom and Jerry's.
I'm just trying to give you a plug.
I don't need a plug. I don't care if it's Tom and Jerry's. You know what I want from you?
What?
I want you to tell this traditional poem you said you were going to say. You know, this is Christmas Eve, and you're going to tell everybody a traditional poem.
Okay.
Christmas poem, right?
Mm-hmm.
You got it?
Got it.
Okay, go ahead.
Ladies and gentlemen, and boys and girls, and friends, I would like to recite a poem by heart and by memory, the traditional Christmas poem at this time, and I quote it. Here it goes.
Okay, go ahead.
'Twas the night before Christmas, and all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. When up on the rooftop I heard such a clatter, I sprang to the window and threw up.
Go ahead, finish it.
What do you mean?
Finish it.
That's all I remember. I guess I had too many Tom and Dickies.
All right. Well, those were the days when comedians didn't have to use the F-bomb every other word, and they had just a lot of good, clean, sort of silly humor. But I don't know. That's just me. I yearn for some of that kind of humor. I think there's a few guys that are doing that. Nate Bargatze, I think, might be one of them. He's a name that comes to mind. There's some others out there. Well, don't forget, we're going to be talking about the year that was, the trends coming up in the future with Gerald Celente. And at 8:25, Eric Robert joins us. In just a few minutes, Virginia Cruda, of course, from Daily Wire and from, of course, News Talk STL in various forms and platforms, joins me on The Tobler Show, 314-912-1019. We'll be right back. We talked to Gene, who calls in. Happy New Year, a little bit early, Gene. How you doing?
Good. Happy New Year. Couldn't hear you there for a second.
Oh, what's going on, brother?
Hopefully we can throw 2023 to the dustbin and start working on burying Marxism. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Congratulations to the Mizzou family on hitting the Cotton Bowl win there.
Yeah, but I was worried about them at first. It was like the most boring game of the century until Mizzou finally figured out how to crack into that Ohio State defense. I wonder how that game would have gone if the Ohio State starting quarterback, who was actually sort of the backup quarterback most of the year, but I guess the other guy went to the portal and that meant he couldn't play. But he was a much more versatile quarterback. So they had the third string quarterback in for three fourths of the game. How the game would have gone if they had a different quarterback.
I'm sorry, I'm cutting you off. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I just wonder how it had gone.
Yeah, I caught your commentary about that. And just briefly, I think that first stringer hopefully has kind of wounded himself in his little sensitivities for a hope for a professional career. And it really boosted the potential career of the gentleman that took the job as the third stringer that showed him up.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Hey, well, all the best to you in the coming new year. Look forward to talking to you more as we go through this very pivotal year. Thanks very much, Gene.
You bet. Pass on best to Helly and the family.
I will do that.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Virginia Cruda joins us now. Of course, you read her on Daily Wire. You hear her on News Talk STL. You read her stuff all over because her stuff is very good. It's wise. It's broad spectrum. And it's deep analysis. How you doing, Virginia? How was your Christmas? Everything good?
Oh, it was great. I'm recovering from a bit of a head cold now, but I'm good.
Yeah. Well, you know, the way I explain it to people when they express their condolences, when you say you're down, you know, I had a little virus on Christmas Day. You know, it exercises the immune system. You know, it's a good thing to keep your immune system tuned up now and then. So it's not a bad thing.
It's not necessarily a bad thing. You just don't like to do it on Christmas Day.
No, you're right. Well, although my wife loves to watch Wonderful Life. We have to put plastic on the couch because she cries about the time the angel thing starts happening.
Start
flowing. Yeah.
You know, I don't know if we've talked about this, but the history behind that movie makes you watch it in a whole different way. I don't know if you knew what Jimmy Stewart was going through before. He had just come back from the war. He was a pilot, a B-24 pilot, and he led a squadron over Europe. And after like flying 20 missions, he became what they call flak happy, which grounded him. It's like PTSD. And they grounded him, and he came back home, and he went home to Pennsylvania and was just lounging in Pennsylvania for a few weeks. And then he thought, you know what, I need to go back to work. And so he went back to Hollywood, but he was so stressed out and he wasn't eating and he looked like hell and no one would hire him.
Yeah.
But he was desperate to do a comedy. He's like, after all this war, we just need to laugh. And he wanted to do a comedy. So he's couch surfing, living with Henry Fonda, who just came back from a tour in the Pacific. And they're just kind of kicking around Hollywood, and no one's coming up with, no one's giving him any roles. And Frank Capra came to Jimmy Stewart and said, you got to do this movie. And he read the script, and he's like, that's depressing. And he walked out of the first meeting, was angry, just didn't want to do it. And after a few weeks, he wasn't getting any more offers. Capra came back to him and he said, Jimmy, you're going to do this movie or you're going to die. Because he was essentially drinking and smoking himself to death. And so eventually, obviously, he did do the movie. And I was thinking about it while I was watching this. Well, I was watching it this year. You know, there's that iconic line from the angel. I didn't fall in. I jumped in to save you because I knew you'd come in after me and you'd rescue me. And then you wouldn't think about killing yourself. In a way, I think that's what Frank Capra did to Jimmy Stewart. He didn't fall into this movie. He jumped in to save Jimmy. And this is, they'd worked together before on You Can't Take It With You in 1936. Jimmy Stewart had just won an Oscar for 1940's The Philadelphia Story before he went to war. So he knew that this guy had it in him to do this role. And he went after him and said, you have to do it. And he hounded him until it got done. And you can really, when you watch the movie, you can see the PTSD kind of bleeding through the screen.
You can see the redemption and the embrace of grace and redemption.
When he's at the bar and he's praying and he says, I'm not a praying man, but show me the way, you know, when he started crying in that scene, that was not scripted.
I'll be darned. I didn't know that. Well, and you know what? That explains, I think, the authentic joy at the end of the movie, too. You know what I mean?
It really does.
What is that? What's the method of acting when you actually become your character? You know, the guy that originated
method acting.
I think of the guy that we saw Jesus Christ Superstar at the Fox years ago. What was the guy's name? Ted. But at any rate. And
I don't know.
We happened to be exiting out the side of the theater when all of the groupies were out there, you know, all the real, real diehard fans. And he came out and, man, it was scary. I mean, I think he was method acting. I mean, maybe to a fault. You know what I mean?
Maybe. I don't know. But yeah, so the movie kind of takes on its own personality when you know the history behind how it was made and what was, you know, really going into all of this. And, you know, Frank Capra actually was a World War One and World War Two veteran. He was an Italian immigrant who earned his citizenship fighting for the United States in World War One.
There's so many thoughts about what you've just explained. I mean, Capra, Fonda, Jimmy Stewart, the people who do great things tend to keep doing great things. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Well,
people
Jimmy
of
Stewart
deep constitution
actually,
do that.
He knew that the war was coming. And in 1939, he bought a trainer, an army trainer plane, because he wanted, when we went to war, he wanted to be a pilot. So he bought a plane in the late 30s. He took a trip to Europe to kind of get a lay of the land. And he knew, because he knew it was coming. And then he enlisted and they refused him because he was too skinny. And he had to get a doctor's note saying that he was just naturally thin in order to get in.
Wow.
And he made it. Something he went else. From buck private to major in like 2 years or something ridiculous.
Wow.
Because he had prepared and trained himself to fly. He continued to serve in the reserve. I believe he flew over Vietnam as a volunteer. He was not a combat pilot over Vietnam, but he flew, his last flight was in 1968, I think, in Vietnam. And he made the rank of Brigadier General before he retired.
I didn't realize it. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, thinking about Capra, you think about Capra sort of grabbing, you know, Jimmy Stewart by the neck and saying, you know, shaking him and metaphorically, hey, you're going to do this. That's what friends are for, to bring back an old Dionne Warwick song. And I'm, you know, my wife, my greatest friend and my soulmate, you know, she sometimes goads me into doing something I don't need to do, but she knows it's good for me. I think our very best, closest friends that really care often will, push the edge with that friendship, at least superficially, when they're really helping you do something that you just can't see. You're blind to what you need. Don't you think?
Yes, I do. I think it's that tough love, you know, reminds you that, hey, maybe you don't want to do this, but you need to.
All right. Now, in another, just after we get talking about these great, iconic American Hollywood heroes, I read your story on the Daily Wire about John Cleese, who's a terribly funny man. And I mean, my wife and I, we grew up with Monty Python, watching that on Sunday evenings and loving it, yeah. You know.
Me too.
So he implies that, Fawlty Towers. So now he implies that in a tweet that maybe Hitler was preferable to Trump. What?
Here's the thing. In a way, I think he probably meant it as a joke, but it kind of fell flat because so many people are doing it for real. It would be one thing if John Cleese was the only one making that comment, and then it would be like, okay, yeah, this dude's joked about Hitler before. We get it. You know, maybe it's not funny to everybody, but it really did fall flat because he's like, okay, five reasons that Hitler was preferable to Trump. And then he ends up listing six because obviously there are so many good things about Hitler, right? And and then he's like, five reasons that Trump is preferable to Hitler, and he could only come up with two, and that was the joke, that there are actually more things about which, yeah. You know, and they were ridiculous, and you could tell it was tongue in cheek, but at the same time,
yeah, the thing, the five ways he lists, the five ways that Hitler was preferable. He fought for his country, never used a teleprompter, nice to dogs, wrote his own books, never played golf, wasn't a big fat slob. So, I mean, he wasn't suggesting that the abject evil that defined Adolf Hitler was somehow best quality. Right. So.
And of course, what he said, what was preferable about Trump was that he didn't commit genocide, obviously.
Right.
And so, like, the imbalance is what's...
Yeah.
You know, I almost wonder if he meant to present it in a different way. Like, he meant to say, you know, you guys are idiots if you think that it's preferable to be nice to dogs than to, you know, the balance is he didn't commit genocide, guys. Like, how are you making, I wonder if the joke was meant to be like, how are you making this comparison? Because there are so many people comparing Trump to Hitler. But
you're right. I think so.
But because of the way that it was presented and the climate in which it was presented, it was like, oh, well, John Cleese thinks that Trump's worse than Hitler, too.
Well, that's just one of the many things that you can read from Virginia Cruda. And Virginia, once again, we've run out of time way too soon. But we look forward to talking to you in the new year. Hope you have a healthy and happy one and a great celebration tomorrow. Thanks for being with me again.
Sounds good. Thank you.
All right. And great story about Capra and Stewart and It's a Wonderful Life. Wow. That's what I love about the show. Eric Robert on the money coming up. Stay tuned.